And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show on this Wednesday, the 3rd of July, 9:06. And as you can expect, we've a busy, diverse 3 hours lined up for you. We want your company over the course of the show, and we want you involved in the programme as well. We've got lots, hopefully, for you to react to, but if you want to raise an issue yourself, give us some information, let us know what you want to talk about. 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000. Alternatively, you can give us a call on 07491 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the show, we're on the X platform, Highland Radio Ireland, on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube. You can watch that on your TV, your smart TV, your Fire Stick. We're on the X platform. I think it's Highland Radio. I created it. I can't remember what it's called. Highland Radio Donegal, is it? And also on Facebook, Highland Hope, Highland News and Sport. Okay. Right, as I say, plenty coming up on the show today. Let's kick off with what's happening on the front of the papers and inside some of them as well, of course. The Finn Valley Voice this morning, community rallies for Drumkeen girl TJ's wish to walk. 3-year-old Drumkeen girl TJ McDade is back home in Ireland after another intensive round of treatment at the Petho Institute in Budapest, and the local community is rallying in support or to support her dream to walk. Much more on the front of and inside the Finn Valley Voice today. On to the Irish Times now. Many of you are interested in the hate speech bill, wondering when it might be brought into effect. Well, not until the autumn anyway. The controversial hate speech, hate crime bill is now not expected to return to the Oireachtas before the summer recess, casting doubts on whether it will be enacted before the general election. The bill was paused in the Senate a year ago when senators, including Michael McDougall, raised several questions about it, in particular its definition of gender. Authoritative sources have confirmed that the bill will not return to the Oireachtas before the summer recess, as had generally been indicated. This means it will not return until the autumn at the earliest, narrowing the window for the legislation to be passed before the general election. Government leaders have repeatedly said they intend for the coalition to continue in office until the end of its term next March, but few in politics believe it will last until then, and all parties are preparing for an autumn election that would make it unlikely that there would be sufficient time to pass that bill. And with by-elections and everything else that is taking place, it does look more likely an autumn election. That being said, Fine Gael are doing well in the polls at the moment, for whatever those polls mean, so they might want to continue trying to widen that gap between themselves and Sinn Féin, for an example, before calling that election. Plenty of coverage of that story from Muff. It's a good news story today. Cathy Donaghy, lovely lady who's contributed to this show and was lovely to meet her in person yesterday, is writing the Irish Independent. The sleepy border village of Muff in County Donegal was brought to a near standstill as film star Russell Crowe and Ryan Tuberty flew in for the opening of a new €1 million venture in which the pair are investing, along with Ronan Keating and Ed Sheeran. The Hollywood actor was fresh from a gig with his band, Lindor Garden Party, at the Gaiety Theatre in London, in Dublin, and he also played at Glastonbury last weekend. By mid-morning, a crowd had gathered along the side of the road, hoping for a glimpse of a celebrity, a rare enough event in Muff. Drummers whipped up the crowd into a near frenzy as families and passers-by stopped to take photographs. And they've created this wonderful building there and a wonderful brand too, as I say, which obviously, look, there's a commercial element to it, free ads and all that kind of stuff. But that comes with the coverage. But it is brilliant for Muff and Inishowen, and as I say, Donegal as well. We'll hear some of that a little later on if you're interested in it. We've got quite a good few interviews in a noisy environment, it has to be said. But maybe if you're interested in that, we can put that out for you a little later on in the programme. Let us go now to the Irish Daily Mail. And this is obviously a big story, but not least with elections looming in Northern Ireland. They take place tomorrow, actually, don't they? Former DUP leader Geoffrey Donaldson is to face additional historical sex offences charges in court today. Mr. Donaldson, 61, is expected to appear at Newry Magistrates Court for a preliminary inquiry hearing to establish if there is sufficient evidence to send him for trial. During previous court hearings, Mr. Donaldson had faced 11 holding charges brought by police. An evidence file has since been reviewed by the North's Public Prosecution Service, and the former DUP leader will now face 18 charges. He'll face one charge of rape, four of gross indecency, and 13 of indecent assault. The charges span a time period between 1985 and 2008. The previous holding charges will be withdrawn in court today. Mr. Donaldson has previously indicated he'll contest the charges he faces. His co-accused, that's his wife Eleanor Donaldson, who's 58, faces charges of aiding and abetting in connection with the alleged offences there. We'll have coverage, of course, from the court case later on in the programme. On to the Irish Daily Star this morning. And the minister in charge of the bottles and cans return scheme, Oisin Smith, has hit back at bin companies threatening to hike prices over losses due to the six-month-old programme. Waste management companies claim they've lost millions in profits. Now bottles and cans are recycled separately under the deposit return scheme and not green bins. You know what this feels a little bit like to me, and this might be a bit random. It feels a bit to me like the rural broadband scheme, whereby a company had, we were providing that and the state was paying for that. And then AIR, in their wisdom, took the handy connections, if you know what I mean. Which kind of set us back a wee bit in Donegal to some extent. I'm not blaming AIR, but their parent company took over the easier stuff. Do you know what I mean? Where it's handy to get broadband to, and then that left the more difficult areas and less attractive areas then to provide broadband. And it's a little bit like this for the waste companies, I'd imagine. They're there doing their thing, but the jewel in their crown is the good plastic and the good aluminium. And that's been taken from them now and changed into another scheme. But it was... It is going to be an additional tax now for those who pay their recycled bins, it has to be said, because those bin prices are going to go up. You're still just then paying an extra 15 cent to go and deliver these bottles and cans yourself, and there's no saving for you as such. So it does end up being an additional tax, 15 cent, 25 cent per bottle or can. But anyway, Minister Smith said, I've been in talks with the Irish Waste Management Association. They were concerned they would lose out in the value of recycling materials. I'm not sure they're out of pocket. I said, show me your accounts. Show me evidence you are down. They haven't done it yet. If they can prove they've lost money, I'll look at their levies and subsidies and see what government can do, which is fair. I suppose that's reasonable, isn't it? Show us the balance books and we'll see what we can do. The Irish Sun, I'm sure you are familiar with the Lucy Letby story. She's a nurse who is a serial killer of young babies. And she was back in court again this week facing further charges. And serial killer nurse Lucy Letby has been convicted of trying to murder a baby girl just 90 minutes after birth. There's a lot of great podcasts out there, one particularly in relation to this story. And it's only when you hear the evidence of what this person did and how she manoeuvred and positioned herself to be able to do it, and the acts and the manner in which she did it are absolutely horrendous. And if you look at her, and they say looks can be deceiving, you could never imagine that a nurse would be capable of such. She showed no emotion yesterday as the verdict came after just 3.5 hours deliberation. But the father of her intended victim, prematurely born child Kay, had his head in his hands while other relatives wept at the end of Letby's retrial. Is it a retrial? The family said over the past 7 to 8 years, we've had to go through a long, torturous and emotional journey twice. It was a retrial. Justice has been served, but it will not take away the extreme hurt, anger and distress that we have all had to experience. Letby, the designated nurse, dislodged a breathing tube against some of what she was doing and withholding or overfeeding and stuff. Absolutely horrendous. And finally, in the Irish Daily Mirror, an important story here. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has written to the Lebanese government and the UN over deeply unsatisfactory delays in the investigation into the killing of Donegal private Sean Rooney. Mr. Martin, who is also the Defence Minister, told the Oireachtas Committee on Foreign Affairs and Defence yesterday he is anxious for the UN to become proactive in the matter after court proceedings were again adjourned until next February. He said this is the seventh adjournment of the trial, and on this occasion, the person who'd been arrested, the key suspect, was not in attendance, either for this trial or for the last one, because of illness, is what we've been informed. The others have remained at large from the beginning, so it's not satisfactory from our perspective. So he's looking for that to be moved on. You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Right, so if you listened to the programme yesterday, and on a number of occasions over the last number of months, you would know there is great concern over the future of the Farn Health Centre. And not just the Farn Health Centre, but also the nursing, the very important nursing services that are provided from that building. Now, there seems to be two pieces of information here. One, what the HSC is saying, and one, what people are seeing and what they are experiencing. So we're going to try and get to the bottom of this again. I'm not sure we'll get it resolved, but I want to welcome back Carmel Lynch onto the programme. Good morning, Carmel.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so where we were at yesterday is that the HSC were insisting that there are no plans to either remove the nurse from the Farn Health Centre or indeed to close the Farn Health Centre, but the information on the ground and the evidence indicates that the opposite is true. What have we learnt since then?
Since the show yesterday, Greg, the voicemail has been reinstated in the health centre. I left the voicemail myself yesterday morning at 11 minutes past 11, and I still have no call back. In the past, if you have left a message like that, before when the nurse came back into the station, to the clinic, she would have give you a call back. It might be an hour, it could be 2 hours, but we always got a call back that day.
Yeah.
Greg, the centre's closed. The files are gone, the nurse is gone, and the centre is closed. I spoke with a friend yesterday, Jackie Malloy, who's used to service so many times for her mum, her dad, and as we speak, her brother. So I've asked Jackie to join us this morning on the station to give us an update what she done yesterday. But while I'm speaking to you, what I would like to know is this. Which assistant director made the decision to close Farn Health Centre? Why was it closed? Number two, we're having a public meeting on Monday night.
Well, we'll get to that if you don't mind, because I want to focus on that specifically. But you asked some very important questions there. A third question, if I can add, why are we being told that what is evident is not the case? That's a worry. You mentioned Jackie as well. Jackie is with us. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Greg.
Right. Talk to me, I suppose, initially, just to remind listeners new to this story, why this is an important centre and service for you and your family, Jackie.
Yes, it is a very important, centre. The nurse is a vital role in our community with the carers. I simply could not have functioned over the last 6 years without the help of both parties. I have a disabled brother who relies heavily again on the nurse support. Yesterday, when I went out to find, I seen the nurse's car at the centre, I went in just to get some information about past treatment that my brother had, and the nurse wasn't able to give me anything because everything literally was gone. There was nothing there. The filing cabinets were completely empty. She had nothing. The nurse in our community, we cover Inch and Fawn. When we call, if we have a problem in the morning, we call the nurse. Like Carmel says, the nurse comes back to us within a couple of hours. She comes, she gives us advice, sometimes treatment. She gives direction and she tells us how to proceed. Now, without that service, we are in some serious trouble because we can't get appointments with doctors. We are left waiting for days without a callback. To take them to the hospital is just impossible. We can take them, but elderly people cannot sit for hours on end in the casualty. We can't do that. So the nurse to us is very, very vital. She is a support network for our carers. I have seen in the past with my own parents, if they had a problem, if they had a medical problem, the carers left in the morning. When they came back in the evening, they were equipped with whatever materials, whatever supplies that they needed to deal with that problem. And 9 times out of 10, we didn't need to go any further. We didn't need the doctor. We didn't need the hospital.
But this means the public health nurse is vital to the community. But by the sounds of it, she's vital to alleviating pressure on local GPs and also the acute hospital. The people
yes,
you were
course.
Talking of do not require acute care. Having them travel to Letterkenny is crazy. I want to read the first line. You were there, Jackie, right, at the health centre yesterday.
Yes,
and
yes.
I want to read the first line yes. of a press release that we received from the HSE at 5 to 12 yesterday. And it reads as follows. There are no plans to move the public health nursing service from Fawn Health Centre, and public health nurse services continue to be provided at the centre. That's the first line of the HSE press release that was issued to us at 5 to 12 yesterday.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that is completely false. That is completely false. I called in with the nurse probably about 2:30, and when I was in, I was so shocked. There was absolutely nothing in that centre. That centre is completely cleared out. There was nothing. And in the past, I would have went into that centre. I was able to pick up supplies for my elderly parents. I was able to pick up different medications for my brother. All that was gone. There was nothing. All that was left for me to do was to go to Bulkhana and try and source, which you don't have the time. You don't have time. You don't have hours. You don't have days. You need treatment immediately. Mm. So that is why the nurse plays a huge role in our community, because we have an aging population. We have people living in the back of Ranch Island. We have people living up in the hills and Fawn. They do not have access to the vehicles to take them to here, to take them to the hospital, to take them to the surgery in Bulkhana. That doesn't happen.
Okay.
The nurse is vital for us because we call the nurse. The nurse, Jackie, has been amazing. She is there. She is on the phone. She is such an amazing support for us. Along with our carers who work hand in hand with our district nurse. So without that service, we are absolutely in serious trouble. And I can't understand why the HSC would, in one hand, say that everything's going to be fine, nothing's changing, your centre's going to remain open. And the next thing we find that our centre is closed.
Okay, stay there, Jackie.
It's shocking. It's unbelievable.
I'll read in fairness to the HSC, I'll read the full statement. As I say, it seems contrary to what we know. There are no plans to move the public health nurse service from Fawn Health Centre, and PHN services continue to be provided at the centre. The public health nurse works out of Fawn Health Centre from Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Now, this is where I'm not sure if this is a change of tact here, but I'll read on. Given that community health nursing is predominantly a domiciliary service, the nurse will not always be available at the health centre. Appointments are scheduled in advance for the nurse depending on the patient's need. The PHN service will continue to have a nurse providing a service to all in Fawn and the surrounding areas. Those who wish to contact the Fawn Health Centre can do so by calling the telephone number. The phone is not manned, which we know that, but the public health nurse is out in the community. That's where she is. Therefore, please leave a message and we will follow up with you directly. Carmel, is that a difference to the service that... do you see that as a different service as to what was being... are the HSE slightly changing their position there, or is that always what you would have seen the service out of Fawn to be, Carmel?
When you have one nurse manned in the station to cover Inch, Fawn, Burnfoot, then they cannot be there 9 to 5. They have to go out and do their duties. That's okay. We know that. But if we left a voicemail at 10:30 in the morning, and maybe Jackie won't be back until 3 or 4 o'clock, that was answered before 5 o'clock that day. We weren't waiting until the next morning. Like, I'm waiting since 11:11 yesterday morning for a phone call. Now they don't know what I want them for, but I still haven't received a call. So in one way, Greg, they're pulling the wool over our eyes. I emailed Jackie yesterday and I asked Jackie to forward on to her boss us as a public need an update on what's going on. But Greg, it's closed. And we need our model now is to get it reopened again. We have to have that. That is even put the carers aside. I said before, my son had joined the hospital, he addressed it with the nurse. I spoke to a lady yesterday who had a baby. She came open, she had preeclampsia. So she had to go to the Bulkhana surgery every day to get her blood pressure taken. The nurse went to visit the baby. She said, don't you be going, no place, I'll come to you. Mm. That nurse came to that lady for 10 days in a row and monitored her
blood
pressure.
How do we know, Carmel, that that's still not the case?
Well, we have one nurse Vival has three and Lough has three. Mm. Why was that one nurse not taken? Why was that one nurse taken away from Fawn, who does the most amazing? And we have said to you in the phone, if we have a client in Inch and the nurses are in Quigley's Point or Askehino, or wherever may be in Muffer, the surrounding areas, it's going to take them longer to get to the client in Inch. Like at the end of the day, when a carer's out, I know the person's been a personal carer, and Jackie's the same. When you need advice, even advice from the nurse, when Jackie, she gave you your mobile number, they says, you need us, this is our mobile number, you need help anytime, you call us for support, that's gone.
Right, that is definitely gone. I'm just trying to see the woods from the trees here in that. So in other words, what the HSC has outlined in terms of, look, at it's open 9 till 5, the nurse can't be there, but will always be available, but appointments are scheduled in advance. So in other words, do you believe, either Jackie or Carmel, that you can now schedule to meet the nurse in Fawn Community Centre, say, for instance, tomorrow afternoon at 2?
No,
that's
gone. Because we don't have a nurse, because our nurse, Jackie, is gone. The nurse that we had last week, and it's gone. We don't even know who the new nurse is. I don't even think the carers know. The carers know nothing.
There is a new nurse, then, is there? No.
I don't. We don't know, Greg. We know nothing. But all we know is the centre is closed, and it's closed. It's gone, and we need the centre reopened. 100%. The nurse is our nurse. Nurse Jackie has been there for a few years. Is gone.
A caller says, I'm a home help for 21 years. The HSC statement is very wrong. A nurse does not sit in one house for 8 hours a day. Her availability to us is vital. The nurse is gone, and once again, rural Donegal is the loser. We, as carers, were never informed of these changes. And not only that, but we're being told by the HSC that there are no changes, which is actually the most frustrating part of this for me, because we're not fools. And I've got Carmel with me, I've got Jackie with me. They're very clear. They know the situation as to what's happening. Jackie has seen with her own eyes that the files are gone from the Fawn Health Centre. Carmel has said quite clearly that the well-thought-of nurse that was there is no longer there, and yet the HSC are there telling us that ring this number, we'll get back to you, and someone will be there available to meet you, as they always have been able to, at the Fawn Health Centre, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5pm. But as it stands, the building is not a health centre. It's an empty shell. Is that what you're saying, Jackie?
Yes, that is correct. Yes, it is an empty shell. There is nothing there. And right. Talking to the nurse, yeah, she has been deployed elsewhere. So what we had in our nurse, in Jackie, we had someone who was in the local area. She wouldn't have been too far away. And, Greg, when you rang at 9 o'clock in the morning, whenever they started, you would have got to speak to the nurse for maybe about an hour. She was there for about an hour in the morning. You would have known then where you were on the list regarding what problem that you had, to what was going on. So you had that. You guaranteed you had Jackie there at whatever time you needed. If it was an emergency, she was straight there. She was on the ball. She was straight on the road. If you didn't have, she was there in the afternoon. But the thing about it is, you could call her mobile. She would say, I'm such in a place, I can be there in 20 minutes, I can be there in 15 minutes. She was local. She was there. She knew the people. She knew a lot of their problems. She knew their health issues. She knew what to do. And that has been taken away from us, which, again, is very, very serious. I can't understand why they would do such a thing. People in Muff, the nurses in Muff, don't know our area. They don't know our people. They don't know anything about us. And I can tell you, I can guarantee, I can call them, as Carmel has already called them, and we will not get a call back. Whenever we call the nurse, we have an immediate problem that we need taken care of. Let it be a block catheter, let it be something silly to anybody else, but to that particular patient, it is a serious problem. Mm-hmm. We call Bunkhana, we can't get an appointment. We go to the hospital, we could sit in the hospital for hours and then endangering that person's life, waiting to be seen. Mm-hmm. So the nurse has, and more times than enough, helped me with my parents down through the years. She has saved my mother's life on a number of occasions with her assistance and her direction and her advice. Okay. So that has been taken away, and that is why we feel so strongly. Carmel was the care for another man. That is why we feel so strongly, because we know how good the healthcare centre was to us. It's local, it's in our area. It is there for immediate help.
Okay.
We are not prepared to call a number and wait. for probably the next day. The CAM was still waiting on the call back.
Yeah, there's no,
that is not good enough.
A caller says, why were HSC employed staff home helps not informed regarding this unacceptable situation? Rural Ireland been destroyed enough. This is not going away. Mm-hmm. And in capitals, the nurse is gone. Left a message yesterday and no reply. Home help don't have time to drive to Muff or Buncrana to liaise or communicate with a nurse. Another, updated public health contact details from June 2024 and Farns not on it. Okay, that's interesting. We'll check that
correct.
Out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get the elected men on. Who are they? What are they doing about this closure? That comes in from Kathleen. And this is no disrespect to any elected representatives, be they councillors or TDs, but I can tell you right now, it's going to be Carmel and Jackie and the rest of the community that fix this, and that is the fact. Because the more noise is made about this, the more embarrassment the HSC receives, the quicker there'll be a resolution. With all due respect, it being raised on the floor of the Dáil, it's nice to hear it, but it's these ladies that are going to get this fixed, because that's what I've seen in the past. And with that in mind, Carmel Lynch, there is, and as I say, no disrespect to politicians. Carmel Lynch, talk to me about this public meeting Monday then. Sorry, I wanted to focus on this. I wasn't cutting across you a little earlier on.
No, you're okay, Greg. It's just I was cut off and just back online again. So what we have decided to do, we are calling a public meeting on Monday night at 7 p.m. in the Fowler Hall. We are asking everybody to come out to support us. We, the community, we can't do this. It's just me and Jackie. We need the community behind us, the carers, the doctors, the nurses, everybody to come and support us on Monday night at 7 p.m. We are also asking the director who made the decision to come to the Fowler Hall at 7 p.m. along with the CHO1 Mandy Doyle as well to come. They have loads of time to organise this now. This is now Wednesday. It's not to Monday night. Also, we would love a doctor from Buncrana to come and support us as well. Because at the end of the day, with the nurse we have, is keeping less appointments for the doctor. It's keeping people out of A&E. You know, older people don't want to go to the hospital. They want to stay at home. So the more help we have in the community with our nurse, we'll keep the A&E one less at the weekend.
Well, good luck to anyone. Good luck to anyone who can get an older person now to the ED. Because they simply don't want to be sitting there for 8 or 9 or 12 hours. Do you know what I mean? That's the problem. It's the alternative. Some older people simply won't actually do that. They won't put themselves through it. Greg, you know what has to be done? It's a change of government, says the listener. I'll come to that one in a second. It's more general. The HSE is a shambles from a management perspective. Imagine if we were to investigate its operations like we've seen done on TV recently. The levels of inefficiency and incapability is astounding. Like, you see, there's two things, one of two things going on here. The people in charge in CHO1 actually don't really know how the system works or what is actually happening. That's one option. Number two, it's smokes and mirrors and they're trying to play us for fools by stating a service is there that isn't there. That's the only two options I can see, unless the nurse is coming back in a couple of days or back next week or another nurse is coming in and that's what they're referencing, Carmel or Jackie. But I've not seen anything, any communication from them to suggest there's a break in service. They're saying it's as it was, it's not closing, there are no plans to close it and the service is there. But Jackie, you know, and you've outlined as well as anyone could, it's simply not there.
Yeah, absolutely. The filing cabinets are empty. The cabinets are empty. There's nothing. There is simply nothing there. There is a table, a phone answering machine, and that is it. There's empty cabinets, and everything else is gone. There was, in the past, I would have went out, and there was shelves full of supplies for the elderly. Mm. They're all gone. I think there was one packet sitting on a shelf. That was it. The rest was gone. Because in the past, I would have told the carers, I'm running out of something. They would have gone out to the Fawn Health Centre. They would have picked it up. There would have been extra supplies there for use for the community. That is all gone. And something, we don't have time to wait for supplies because they arrive. I mean, HSC sent out a van at twice a month or once a month with supplies. But you run out. You do run out. And you can't get them. You probably have to go to Muff. But again, is Muff manned all the time? Well, I pass it regularly and I don't see that being opened. So we have to rely on our carers to keep us supplied whenever we run out. So there is a big need for our health service to be reinstated immediately in form. And if they're saying that it is still going and there is someone there, well, what are they going to work with? Because there's nothing. They have no files. they have nothing. They have nothing.
So the files are important. The files are important, obviously, that if you contact them, Jackie, they have a reference. Okay, just, I know you know this. I just want to make sure all the listeners understand the importance of those files not being there any longer. Jackie, listen, thank you very much. Stay in touch with us. Carmel, just remind us one more time of this public meeting Monday night. It's in the Fowler Hall at 7 p.m. Everyone invited. And of course, you, as you say, you want those affected by it within the health service. My word, ED consultants could turn up at this meeting. They won't, but they could, because this is actually taking work off them by having these services in the community.
Yes, of course, Greg. At the end of the day, our priority now is to reopen. Yesterday morning it was to not to close it, as, but this morning is to reopen it. And we need the nurse back. So we are asking all the politicians, any doctor, nurse, is welcome to come and join us to show us their support to keep the pressure off the doctor's surgery, keep the pressure off A&E, because that one nurse in our wee community does so much along with their carers. We and even the people who doesn't have carers in their home, they also have a backup with that nurse at the end of the road. And, you know, it's just so sad. This is 2024 that we are talking about closing centres instead of opening one. They built a state-of-the-art one in Buncrana in the wrong place. We won't even go there with that. It's overrun down there. You can't get an appointment with the doctors. So this nurse is keeping people away from that premises, and she's doing the support that she needs along with her carers. And the carers are a vital part of our community for the old people. If we can't look after the old people in our community, then we should give up.
Okay.
Because you couldn't, Greg, have a show without Carling, and Carling couldn't have a show without you. And that's the same as us with the nurses and the carers. Mm-hmm. We need one to support the other, and that's what we need. So please come out and support the community.
Yeah, and can I say to you, Carmel, if you don't mind, it's the carers are supporting, the carers are actually also supporting the health service, the actual infrastructure of this country and how we care for people with dignity and as close to their home or in the home. Do you know what I mean? It ripples far beyond mutual reliance. This is actually supporting the health service, and it's not being seen for that. Okay, Monday night in the Fowler Hall.
I went for a walk, Greg. I went for a walk on Monday evening. It was 10 past 10. And one of the carers passed me on her way home from a day's work at 10 past 10 at night. Mm. So she was with her client at an inch in the back of bench, wherever it may be. And at 10 past 10, that girl passed me on the roads, and that was her leaving to go home for that night work. So it's not to say they have a 9-to-5 job. They don't. They do early morning shifts from 6 o'clock in the morning to whatever time, and then night time. Mm-hmm. They have afternoon shifts. I've had it here with Hubert. You know, so them people, them girls, it doesn't matter if it's rain, snow, one hail, they have to go see them clients, because a lot of times the clients could be living on their own, mm-hmm. who only sees the carers or a nurse on a basis. So we need the carers supported, and we need the nurse back in Fawn Health Centre.
All right, Carmel, listen, we're looking for further clarification. Thank you very much for that. This reminds me a little bit of the St. Joseph's story, whereby it took about 5 days. I think it took about 3 or 4 or 5 days to actually get the definitive press release. We kept going back, and there was a line changed each time. And there's a serious communications issue here. There's certainly something going on. I don't know what the story is. But we will get to the bottom of it. And as I say, Carmel and Jackie and many others are on the case. If you're interested in supporting what they're doing, these are people, by the way, who are the carers. These aren't politicians. These are people on the front line who know themselves exactly what's needed. If you want to support them and support that fight, you can get along to the Fowler Hall in Toobin on Monday night. It's at 7 p.m. Everyone's been invited, but the more people that turn up, the stronger the message is. And I'll tell you, folks, nothing gets stuff done like the people banding together. Mountains can be moved. So if you can get along to that meeting Monday night, please do. We'll see what happens between now and then, however. Dr. Cathal O'Connor is a co-author of a report, a study, Skin, Health and Disease, and he joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Doctor. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
I really appreciate it. The findings of this study are really fascinating. Over half of the population have used a sunbed, but also quite interesting, it looks at our attitude to tanning more generally. So, Cahill, I mean, you're the person or one of the people behind this. It's best maybe for you to frame it from a medical perspective. What do you think's going on here?
Yeah, so this is a big study looking at over 1,000 Irish people, which was representative of the entire population. And essentially, we wanted to look at what people's, you know, beliefs about tanning was. So first of all, people, you know, they knew the risks of tanning related to skin cancer. However, despite that, they were still eager to get a tan. So as you said, half of people tan regularly in Ireland and 40% had used sunbeds and 10% had used sunbeds in the last year. And this was taken during the COVID pandemic, so that's very concerning. So our kind of emphasis is actually maybe we should be focusing on early detection of skin cancer and, you know, educating people on this early signs of skin cancer rather than focusing exclusively on tanning as a risk for skin cancer.
But because it seems to be, Cahill, correct me if I'm wrong, that people seem to believe, they're aware of the risks, but to look good, to have a tan, a bit of a tan, or however they might see it in their own minds, it's worth the risk. So people are going in here with their eyes open that I do know sun damages my skin. I accept that. I know there's a greater risk with sunbeds, but I look better and I feel good, so I'm going to roll the dice.
Exactly. So people were very aware of the risks of skin cancer with tanning and sunbeds in particular, but still, despite that, the same people, you know, we're still continuing to tan, and half of the people who tanned regularly said that it was worth getting sunburned to get a tan. And obviously every sunburn doubles the risk of getting a skin cancer. So it's very, very serious. So there seems to be this kind of cognitive dissonance where people know the risk, but they're still happy to do it. So it's a cultural problem, I think, that we really need to discuss.
A tan sunburn is skin damage.
Yeah, exactly. So a tan on, you know, fair skin or lightly pigmented skin is a sign of kind of trauma related to radiation.
And why is there a greater risk from sunbeds over natural sunlight?
I suppose the bulbs from the sunbeds emit this very, very concentrated ultraviolet radiation, which is predominantly in the UVA spectrum. So that is very problematic in terms of causing skin cancer. So when we talk about the light spectrum, we talk about ultraviolet and visible light. So it's the ultraviolet spectrum that leads to skin cancer. And the bulbs emit ultraviolet radiation that is, you know, 10, 15, 20 times greater than the radiation that we get from the sun. That's why it only takes a few minutes in a sunbed to potentially get burnt if people aren't used to it.
How high are the incidences of skin cancer in Ireland? Maybe even compared to other cancers.
Yeah, so skin cancer is by far the most common cancer in Ireland. It dwarfs all the other forms of cancer. I suppose there's a range of skin cancers. So melanoma is the one that's probably the scariest. But there are other serious forms of skin cancer, which are not melanoma. They're squamous cell carcinomas and basal cell carcinomas. So there is kind of a spectrum, but they're by far the most common form of cancer across all the different types of cancer.
With all that being said then, because it's likely that everyone knows someone or knows someone and knows someone that's had skin cancer, do you scratch your head then when you see the public attitude to skin cancer, considering the risk is so high, but people are prepared to take that risk?
Somewhat. I think there's this enduring appeal of a tan, which, you know, is really advocated, I think, in the media and on magazines and things like Love Island. If you look at Love Island, they all have their tanning oil on. So I think it's a big cultural issue rather than anything else. And I think we really need to kind of focus on stopping that kind of idea as a paradigm of beauty, or else, you know, making sure that people know that fake tan or self tanners are just as good as getting, you know, a skin cancer causing tan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we're going to have to look at how we do the messaging too, because we speak to skin specialists on this show and they talk about the importance of even on cloudy days putting protection on as part of your routine. I'm not sure how many people actually do that. More perhaps do than did in the past, but obviously not enough. And I think when you start getting into that, it starts feeling a bit unreal to people. I wonder maybe if that's, you know, part of the messaging issue that, you know, people are associating it with, you know, 27 degrees in Rosnaila Beach, you know, not 19 degrees with high UV levels on a cloudy day.
Exactly. So we would recommend, I mean, personally, I wear a factor 100 every day of the year. So I think it's just easier to keep a good habit. There isn't a huge benefit once you go above factor 30, but, you know, factor 50 is what we would generally recommend. But we would definitely recommend from March to October every day of the year that people would use sunscreen, SPF 50 or more if possible. And also to reapply. The big problem that people or the big mistake that people make is not reapplying.
It's just doing one and done. And that's it. Yeah,
exactly.
So say, for instance, as yourself using regularly factor 100. By what proportion or what degree if you reduced your risk of getting skin cancer?
So it reduces it very dramatically. I suppose it depends on the individual. There are a lot of factors involved. It depends. So someone with very, very dark skin, so someone whose ethnicity is from Nigeria, let's say they're very low risk of developing melanoma or other forms of skin cancer. But for Irish people, let's say the standard person in the Northeast, who has very lightly pigmented skin, wearing sunscreen would really dramatically reduce the risk. It's not just about wearing sunscreen though. So physical protection is very important. Hats are very important because they provide physical shade, and obviously just avoiding the sun during the worst time of the day, you know, around midday is important as well.
What about our need, and this is not my question as such, it's coming from a couple of listeners, what about the need to soak up natural vitamin D?
Yeah, it's a very interesting concept. So I suppose we can get vitamin D through our diet, but we won't get skin cancer if we get vitamin D through our diet. You know, so in Ireland, we should probably just be supplementing orally with vitamin D. So I think that's the simple answer to that, really, that it's if you have a healthy diet, plus or minus supplement with vitamin D, you don't have to, you know, cause skin cancer to get your vitamin D quota.
Okay. Chemicals in some fake tans are dangerous for the human body. Could he discuss the dangers of them? I don't know what evidence there is in relation to that.
In fake tan, is it?
Yeah.
So I suppose it depends on the product itself. Most of the products are very, very safe.
They're factory moisturizers, aren't they, really?
Exactly, with you know, kind of pigment that stays in the skin. There is a big point of misinformation on the internet at the moment. Obviously, there's all kinds of crazy things that people say on the internet, but there is a conspiracy theory that, you know, skin or sunscreen actually causes skin cancer. And obviously, that's completely incorrect. It's completely nonsense, but it's finding kind of a body among, you know.
Well, you see, if I, you know, I did actually get sunburnt last week, and I do know the dangers of it, but the sunscreen was out of date. But anyway, I'm sitting here looking at you with a big brown head feeling silly, but that what we do is, and it's just the part of the world that is now, if I want to get a color and I want to sort of deny the risk and I don't want to sort of listen to Dr. Cathal O'Connor, I might be more inclined to go and say, well, look at the dangers of fake tan. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, and I need to get that vitamin D into me one way or other. So Dr. Cathal O'Connor is part of Big Pharma or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, and we do tend to, in this day and age, and I wonder if this is part of the problem, we do try and tend to sort of source information that makes us feel good about the life choices that we make. So now what we do is we look at the science and the stats and we find them to fit what we feel. You know what I mean? Rather than to guide us, it's to sort of make us feel better about the choices that we make.
Exactly, because things can always be taken out of context. You know, so the evidence is extremely clear that sunscreen prevents skin cancer. So I think if people do have any concerns about sunscreen, they can use physical or mineral sunscreens that contain zinc oxide. You know, because people don't like the term chemical, but actually, so there's chemical which absorbs sun rays, or there's physical which reflects it, so it doesn't actually get absorbed into the skin. So if people do have particular concerns, there are options within the sunscreen spectrum that might suit them better.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay, interesting. Do you have any knowledge, by the way, about the aluminium in deodorants? Is that, I mean, that's about absorption. I don't know. Like, I do have my concerns about that, especially this stuff that you don't have to shower, apparently, for like 5 days, you know, 75-hour protection or whatever it might be. There are alternatives to that. Would you use aluminium-based antiperspirant?
I do. So I a lot of that evidence is kind of, there were some, you know, early studies, you know, showing maybe concerns that they were getting absorbed into lymph nodes and things like that. But it doesn't seem to have come through. So a lot of the natural, you know, people can use them if they like. There are natural options out there, but I generally don't find them very effective. Mm-hmm. And we in dermatology see a lot of patients with hyperhidrosis, especially. Yes. Armpit hyperhidrosis, and we do recommend aluminium zirconium based antiperspirants. They're very, very effective.
Okay, sorry for digressing there. I appreciate your input though, because that's a bit of misinformation I had in the back of my head. Take care of yourself, doctor. Thank you. That's Dr. Cathal O'Connor, co-author of Skin Health and Disease. You're tuned to Wednesday's 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio.